The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, it's Patrick Cox here, and today we're going to India, where it's quite a moment for the politics of linguistic identity. We're going to hear about some of India's smaller languages, and boy, does the country have a lot of those. We're also going to hear about the widespread, ever more widespread, use of English in India. But let's start with one particular language that has its own unique and at times troubled history in India, Urdu. India's new Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, is a Hindu nationalist, which means for him, he's a big proponent of the Hindi language. He and his cabinet have switched from giving speeches in either Hindi or English to Hindi only. They want India's government to be a Hindi-speaking one. And that's worrying a lot of people who speak India's other languages.
Social media. This is a sensitive issue, and it causes disquiet.
This is NDTV, one of India's most popular TV channels. And a full three-quarters of Indians do not speak Hindi as their first language. And for many of these people, they'd prefer the government operate in English, which is more of a neutral language. It has its baggage, certainly, but it doesn't pit one linguistic group against another.
The PMK chief saying in a statement, imposition of Hindi unacceptable.
So, this is the situation that Urdu finds itself in under a Modi government. Sonia Paul spent several months in the Indian city of Lucknow studying Urdu. Here's her report.
Going into it, I knew that learning Urdu would be a daunting task. But I had a leg up. It wasn't going to be completely new. Several years ago, I'd studied Hindi. To the untrained ear, Hindi and Urdu sound similar. They share a lot of the same vocabulary, but they have different scripts, and they have different connotations.
Actually, I come from a Muslim family, and since we were kids, we were supposed to read Urdu.
I met 21-year-old Nusrat Ansari in Lucknow. She was auditioning to perform Dastangoy, an ancient Urdu storytelling art that's being revived. Ansari told me that as a child, she spoke mostly Hindi.
At that point of time, I wasn't that interested in Urdu, so I didn't take it up properly. But once I went to college and I had a bit of a cultural thing, so then I thought, okay, I should learn Urdu.
What do you mean by cultural thing?
I started engaging in all sorts of activities, cultural revivalism activities and all that. Dastan Bejna
Afrasiyab. Hindi and Urdu are so similar that when Nusrat was listening to the lines she had to memorize, which were in Urdu, she wrote them down in the Hindi script. Artist Mahmood Farooqi has been reviving Urdu storytelling. He says reciting Urdu is a sign of prestige in India.
I mean, our TV, television anchors like to use Urdu. Parliamentarians like to use Urdu poetry. Political leaders, even Modi recites a couplet or two, you know.
But you won't find India's new prime minister giving a speech in Urdu. Because he's such a staunch advocate of Hindi, many people are wondering whether his new language policies are part of a larger plan to wean out languages like Urdu. Whereas Hindi script stems from Sanskrit, Urdu traces its roots to Persian. It was born in India around the 15th century, when Persian began to mix with local North Indian dialects. Mehr Farooqi is a South Asian languages scholar at the University of Virginia. She says that by the 18th century, Urdu was an important literary language in India.
Just like English is now, in the sense that it was a language of prestige and it was considered to be the language of educated people. So everybody studied Urdu and therefore they spoke Urdu also.
But about 100 years ago, Urdu started to decline in India. The British wanted a common language for the country and more people wanted Hindi to be that language. And Hindi and Urdu, even though they were so similar in spoken form, became symbols of religious difference.
It became like Urdu equals Muslim and Hindi equals Hindu.
This is why the new government's promotion of Hindi is so controversial. It puts a spotlight on India's post-colonial division into India and Pakistan. Storytelling artist Mahmood Farooqi says it was another setback for Urdu.
You had a lot of Hindu nationalists and Hindu fundamentalists saying Urdu created Pakistan, so let's ban it. There was a lot of discrimination against it in schools. It wasn't taught. The government did nothing to propagate it or to help its cause. And that continues to be the state of affairs today.
And while some people, like Nusrat, are motivated to learn Urdu, she says the language is struggling.
I wouldn't say that, you know, it's very popular and everybody understands it. That's because most of them haven't been exposed to it.
This exposure will be harder to come by if the new Hindu nationalist government keeps favoring Hindi over India's other languages. That would only compound the problems Urdu's already facing. But there are about 50 million native Urdu speakers in India, and others, like Nusrat, who are rediscovering the language through its cultural heritage. So while Urdu may not have the same dominance in India it once did, it looks like there might still be a place for it in the country. For The World, I'm Sonia Paul. सिर्फ सांसे ही तो बाकी है जब तेरी याद आती है या
We've got photos from that story and more at pri.org/language. And while you're on the old webinet, go to soundworks.org. It's the podcasting arm of PRI. One of the podcasts you'll see featured there is called Sideshow. It's a spin-off of Studio 360. And the latest episode is a really fun one about a New Zealander who lives in Manila who's called Pogo. Have you heard of him? He's insanely popular on YouTube thanks to his mashups of dialogue from popular TV shows and movies all set to music. It's kind of addictive. Back now to India. And of course, it's not just Urdu that's looking nervously at its future. All the big regional languages, the likes of Tamil, Punjabi, Bengali, all of them have reason to look into the future and consider at least where they'll be 50 or 100 years from now. There are real questions whether they'll be doing as well in the future as they are now. And then there are the hundreds of smaller, much more localized languages. For some of them, survival, even in the next generation or two, it's an open question. And another open question is exactly how many languages exist in India and in what form, spoken, written, taught in schools, etc. Well, there's a group of linguists in India who think the best way to ensure a future for as many of these languages as possible is to document them. Hadley Robinson spent some time looking into this. Here's what she found out.
In western India, in the state of Gujarat, lies the small town of Chota Udaipur. Many people from the Ratwa tribe live here. Down a narrow dirt road, past cotton plants and piles of harvested corn husks, 80-year-old Latu Rutia rises from the cot on his back porch. He tells me that his people are primarily farmers and have been for generations. Rutia wears just a loincloth and an earring. He speaks his native tongue, Ratwi. Rutia says in the schools his grandchildren attend, they are taught in the state language, Gujarati. They are forced to speak differently, he says. Rutia worries that elements of the Ratwi language are trickling away, even though it's believed there are nearly a million speakers. The number of speakers, though, may be less important than how and where the language is spoken. That's where the People's Linguistic Survey of India comes in. They have field workers spread across the country, documenting Ratwi and hundreds of Indian languages. Researchers are documenting each language's characteristics and recording its folk stories and songs. They also note how the languages describe time and color. For example, the Ratwi language labels various stages of dawn, when the cock crows as one part, and when the birds start moving, another. Ganesh Devi created the survey. He says embedded in each language are unique ways of seeing the world.
Some languages in India do not have terms for the color blue. I asked them how they look at the sky. So they said they do not think of a blue sky. They just think of the sky. And they think of the sky as so sacred that no adjective be attached to it.
Of the roughly 900 languages spoken across India, many are closely related. Some, though, very wildly, especially when it comes to concepts like color. According to Andrew Garrett, linguistics professor at the University of California, Berkeley, it's these singular ways of describing things that are the first to go when a language like Ratwi assimilates into dominant languages. That's one reason documentation can help.
If your government is interested in supporting small languages, then it's helpful for them to know that the language of your village is really quite different from the language of the other villages nearby. They might actually put some effort into doing what's needed in education or in language documentation.
UNESCO has listed nearly 200 Indian languages as endangered. Some regions of India are experimenting with offering mother tongue-based education. That's when students are taught in the same language that they speak at home. Many studies show that approach increases children's learning and decreases dropout levels. It's something the Indian linguists support. And Andrew Garrett says it can help slow the death of languages.
In the face of thousands of endangered languages, not all of them are going to still be used in 100 years. Many of them won't be, but I think some efforts will be successful.
Earlier this year, the Indian linguists started handing over their findings to the Indian government. Davy says the government response was encouraging. He's hopeful they will introduce a program supporting mother tongue-based education. Now comes another challenge, convincing people that their language doesn't have to hold them back.
Language is becoming a kind of condition for being counted as modern. If you speak your language, you are traditional. If you speak some other language, you are modern.
To Davy, the Ratwa people living in rural Gujarat are just as modern as those racing to business meetings in downtown Mumbai. Just because they speak an ancient tongue and live far from the city doesn't mean they should be excluded from proper schooling and progress. Now that Davy and his colleagues have provided details of all the known languages of India, they're hoping for swift government action so that school teachers will once again instruct students in their native language. For The World, I'm Hadley Robinson.
Okay, last take now on India and languages. And we're going back to Hindi, but this time how it relates to English, this uneasy relationship that the two languages have. And of course, it's been made a little bit more so by the new Prime Minister Modi, who thinks Indians overuse English and underuse Hindi. That got Big Show contributor Deepak Singh thinking about whether Modi has a point. Here's Deepak.
I've been living in the US for 11 years, so I speak and hear English language all the time. But I often crave Hindi, my first language, and one of the official languages of India. So before I left America to spend the summer with my family in India, I promised myself I'd only read Hindi language books and speak mostly in Hindi. It hasn't been that easy. A few days after I arrived, I set out to buy a short story collection by a famous Hindi writer, Munshi Premchand. I went to a well-known bookseller in my hometown, Lucknow, the heartland of Hindi language, but I learned that he only sells books in English now. At another bookshop, the shopkeeper pointed to an isolated corner where they had Hindi books. I bought one and took it to an upscale cafe next door. The cashier and waiters only wanted to communicate in English, no matter how much I tried to speak Hindi. I took a sip of coffee and opened my book. Just as I started reading, I heard the Miley Cyrus song, Wrecking Ball. I noticed a group of teenage girls a few tables away, singing along, shoulder dancing. When I was growing up in India, I went to an English school where students were fined for speaking in Hindi. Flunking Hindi class was almost a matter of pride. My parents wanted me to be fluent in English because it came with the promise of a good career, wealth, and status. Now India's new Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, wants civil servants to use Hindi instead of English. They've even been urged to communicate in Hindi on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media. I finished my coffee and walked out of the cafe thinking, where am I going to find someone who won't speak in English? Maybe I should ask the Prime Minister.
Deepak Singh. And that's it for today. I'll post links to other podcasts we've done on languages in India. That'll be at pri.org/language. I'll also see you on Facebook at the World in Words page or on Twitter, where I tweet under the guise, not much of a guise really, Patrick Cox, PatriCox. I'll be back soon. Thanks for listening.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.